Hey, we welcome everybody to our CDBG Policy Committee's meeting for March 20th, 2025. We're meeting at 1385 South State Street in Salt Lake City. The time is 10 p.m. I think we pretty well have everyone here. Gail Alquist from Bike County is online, correct? He's going to join us. We also have Larry from Bear River is joining us online. So
thank you.
We welcome you guys that are online. We'd love to see your happy, smiling faces, but we'll have to deal with that. So, we got new Brittany is out. Alpha, she's online.
We can't see their faces there.
Did we get your name right, Brittany? Brittany, Alpha.
I just always call her Brittany.
You're muted, Brittany. Maybe she stepped away for a second.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is to review the policy committee terms and new member introduction. We've got some new members. We welcome Greg Jensen from Sevier County. Is Greg here today? There we go. Greg Jensen. He's appointed to represent 6th County, AOG. We've got Gail, who's from Washington County, who's going to join us online. He was appointed to represent 5th County. And are there any other changes we're aware of?
Everyone's still planning on finishing out their terms.
We hope so. We like that. And then next is to elect a chair and vice chair for the next 2 years, correct?
Correct.
So we two-year seat. Is there anyone who would like to throw their hat in the ring? Or?
Not chair. We just keep it the same.
Fine.
Okay.
So that's a motion.
Sure. Make a motion. We keep the chair and vice chair. The same.
Okay. Any discussion on that motion, or do we have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a second. All those in favor? Pardon?
Vice chair.
Vice chair is
Mark Allen.
Mark Allen from Washington Chair, Wasatch Front Regional AOG. Okay, we have a motion to keep myself, Kendall Critton, as chair, and Mark Allen as vice chair. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Bye.
All right. Thank you. Next item on the, well, let's see. Next item is the manual training on Open and Public Meeting Act. Two parts to this. Elliot Lunch is going to administer the oath of office and then discuss conflicts of interest. Elliot?
Open public meeting training.
Well, let's
jump into the open training first.
I think that's what we did last time, so let's do that.
Music, you have the.
Zach's going to run that. Zach's Mr. Music today. Sounds good.
Commissioner Alquist has joined now.
Well, Commissioner Alquist, we've accepted you as a member of our group. We welcome aboard.
So,
There we go. This is the annual training for the Open and Public Meetings Act. It is required by law that once a year we review this. Try to make it as painless as possible. And the next slide, the purpose of the Open and Public Meetings Act is the public's business should be done in public. So any actions are open, all the votes are in public, and deliberations are done in open. Next slide. Okay, they say the devil's in the details, but when it comes to law, the devil's in the definitions. So the act, first of all, only applies to a public body, which is already created by statute. It has at least two members. Expends public revenue and makes decisions regarding public business. Well, that's what you guys do. So congratulations, you are a public body. Participate means the ability to communicate. Next one. And this is the most important, probably, of the definitions. What is a meeting? It was changed, not the most recent legislature, but last year, 24. It is the gathering of a public body to discuss, receive comments, or act on a relevant matter. The meeting has to be called by an authorized person, generally the chair. There has to be a quorum, which is at least half of the body, members of the body. It would not, that definition, therefore, does not include a chance meeting or social gatherings. And meetings can be conducted electronically, obviously, we see participating remotely. So it does not include like a chance meeting or a social gathering. So if you all want to get together and watch the NCAA tournament, that's fine. But you can't use that as an excuse to get around the law. If you're going to take action on a relevant matter, something that is within the scope of the body's authority, then it has to be called, has to follow the requirements of the building. And so next slide.
How is that different? You said it changed a little bit. How is that different than it had been?
The definition, first of all, definition of public body and definition of meeting was changed. There was, it used to be that there was a specific, they said about social meetings. And what they did was they just changed meeting means you're gathering to talk about official business. So if you get together for something that's not official business, that's not a meeting, and the act doesn't apply.
So a formal act of calling a meeting for a specific agenda item or whatever would be constituted as a meeting.
Yes. And again, relevant matter, it's something within your authority, so you need to consider a grant for CDBG. But again, if you wanted to get together and watch the NCAA tournament, that's not a relevant matter. It's not within your authority. It's fine, go ahead and do it, but it would not be a meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. And this is the gist of the Open Public Meetings Act. All meetings of public bodies are open to the public. There are some limited exceptions to that. And this also is a new thing that was added last year. The quorum of a public body may not act together outside of a public meeting to predetermine an action. I think that it probably arose and probably got wind of certain bodies that would get together and say, well, this is what we want to accomplish. This is what we want to do. And we'll go through the motions of having an open meeting. So not that that's a problem, but that is something to be aware of. The legislature added that. But all meetings are open to the public. Okay. Before a meeting, when a meeting is called, before the meeting, we have to post what's called Class A notice at least 24 hours prior to the meeting. The date, the time, and the place, and the meeting agenda. We can post a yearly notice of scheduled meetings. And then, even then, we would probably post a 24 hours notice of the agenda.
Is there any discussion on how complete or what needs to be in the agenda? Is it just an agenda? We get some pushback sometimes and say your agenda items aren't clear enough the way they're listed on the posted agenda. We don't know what you're talking about.
Well, good question. Let's go to the next one.
It's usually with the packet if they'll follow the next step and go to the packet.
Okay, well, first of all, let's talk about the agenda in a second.
Okay.
Class A notice. The notice has to be posted on the Utah Public Notice website that's maintained by the state and also on the agency website or department's website. And then a click. There. That is what the Utah Public Notice, that's a screenshot portion of the Utah Public Notice website. That's what it looks like. All right, let's talk about agendas. Okay. First of all, 24 hours notice. The topics need to be identified with reasonable specificity. That is all the guidance we have, is that a reasonable person would look at the agenda and know what is being considered. You cannot take final action unless the matter is included as an agenda item. So it has to be on the agenda before you can vote. You can discuss what you call it would be a non-agenda item if it's brought up. You could discuss it, but it would have to be scheduled for the next meeting before any vote or any action.
So where it says no final action unless matter is included on the agenda item, does the agenda item have to say motion next to it, or is it just an agenda item as long as it's on there and vote?
Like I said, the guidance we have is reasonable specificity. That a reasonable person would know what is being considered with the agenda here.
We usually on our county agenda, an item will say discussion. Yeah. If it's something that we intend on potentially voting on in that meeting, the language will be discussion and consideration of, and then whatever the agenda item is. So that again, people would say, okay, consideration, they're maybe going to vote.
That's what we do as well.
Yeah, and I work with both governments, and it is, it'll say action items or items under consideration, something like that. You know, that we're going to approve $10,000 or whatever, playground equipment, say. Like I said, that's what we have is reasonable specificity. I do know once in a while it comes up, people say, what the heck is, you can't say, we have the agenda, oh, we're going to do stuff. We're going to hand out grants. You have to say what grants are being considered, what expenditures are being considered. That's the best guidance I can give you. Okay, and I think we should get the agenda.
There it is.
Can't see it, but that's today's agenda. Okay, next slide. What if it's not on the agenda? What if there's a mistake? If there is an error, then it would have to be scheduled for the next meeting and then reconsidered. And again, like we said, if it's if the agenda is not clear, if it's not complete, again, the matter can be discussed, but you cannot take a final action until it is properly noticed on an agenda. That is, you're right, that is something that's, there are some question marks that have come up on that. Okay, so, Don? Normally, public bodies have regularly scheduled meetings. Sometimes it is necessary to have an emergency meeting to determine the body's emergency. It really is unscheduled. If there is something of an urgent nature that needs to be addressed, in other words, we can't wait till the next meeting, the regular meeting, we can call an emergency meeting. Call the best notice practicable, at least to notify all members. The majority of the members have to approve and agree to the meeting, and the same notice and agenda requirements apply.
Does that mean the 24-hour notice?
And for our purposes, if we had this body had an emergency or unscheduled meeting, we would probably be able to meet the 24-hour notice. We don't deal with that many emergencies.
How do you get around that if something, like, for example, something came up this morning in a county and that it couldn't wait till this time tomorrow to give the 24-hour notice that we're going to discuss it? It's got to be decided today.
Well, that's where it says best notice practically.
Okay.
So if it is an emergency, and it's happened, especially local governments dealing with flooding, weather emergencies,
this needs to be done, and it has to be done. When I say the agenda requirements apply, you can only discuss the information that is the purpose of the meeting.
Pertinent to that.
Yeah, the reason the meeting was called. But and I will say this, it was several years ago, it was a long time ago, but there was a school district, and it was a flooding. There was some flooding issues, and so they had an emergency meeting on, coordinating the flooding response. And while they were there, they said, we should fire the superintendent. and they did, and they got out, and people said, wait a minute, you kind of slipped that in and under the guise of an emergency meeting. So if and when that happens, should focus on the meeting should be focused on the purpose of calling an emergency. Okay. Meetings can be closed under certain circumstances. Those circumstances are listed on this screen. Those are the only times you can close a meeting. And you look through that, but probably most of those they're not something that this body would be dealing with. However, it could be something we need to address in a closed meeting. And it has to be for one of those reasons, which is stated and entered in the minutes that we're closing the meeting for example, to discuss pending litigation. Yes. You see that quite often. Two-thirds of the board has to approve. And if the meeting is closed, you can have deliberations. In the closed portion of the meeting, the public is asked to leave. and you cannot take an action in a closed meeting. The only vote that you can make in a closed meeting is a vote to go back to an open session. So in other words, if it were, for example, the character confidence of an individual, you could discuss if there's a public employee that's having some problems, you could discuss that, but any action taken has to be taken in an open meeting.
Can you clarify the definition of pending litigation?
No. I worked with local governments, and again, it's not defined, but it's reasonable. I think it's a reasonably pending litigation. Okay. So, yeah, it comes. That's probably the most used by adults.
I guess you just do your best.
Yeah.
To say, is there a possibility of this item issue creating litigation?
I have seen, by the way, this is again full government, was trade secrets. They were approving some software, and the company asked us if you please keep that private because it was a trade secret. And so, in order to protect that, we had it supposed to be. Okay, so moving on. Okay, all public meetings are recorded, and the recordings are complete and unedited. They will be posted usually within a day or two on the public notice website. A closed meeting is still recorded, but it is not made public. So if there were a closed portion, that would be separated out from the part that's being public. and then if you do a site tour, it was the committee on housing and CHA. And they actually did a site tour of a new project. And what they did is they just entered the minutes that they had visited this place. So in other words, Zach just has to follow you around with the microphone to record it. Where it says, the second one, recordings are complete and unedited. This was, it was last year, a local, I think it was a county here in Utah, and a member of the body basically expressed his very unvarnished opinions on certain ethnic groups. That stays on the recording. So be careful. I mean, be careful what you say. That stays there forever. Okay? So those recordings are posted. Minutes, you've probably all been on public bodies where they talk about doing the minutes and the approved minutes. It is part of the record of the meeting, and so it's important. The minutes have the date, time, place, the members that are present, any votes, any persons commenting, including members of the public,
and the substance of the public, or substance of the comments. When you approve the minutes, you can't edit them. You can't change, you know, I didn't say that about whatever ethnic group, but if it was, if you review it and it says, well, it says here I voted yes, but I actually voted no, then you should bring that to the attention that they can correct the minutes. Minutes are posted after they are approved. They're posted on the public notice website.
Is the public minutes like this or the recording is one or the other, the official minutes, if you will, of the...
Well, it's both. If there is a discrepancy, if it did come up as a way, but I don't remember talking about this, I don't think this is correct, you can refer to the recording. In fact, you could actually, the minutes could include a link, you know, a link to the recording. My sister works in the legislature, and that's what she does. She links, when there's a discussion, she puts the link so you can hyperlink yourself to that recording. So the minutes could actually refer to the recordings.
We're totally revamping how we're going to present our minutes. We've had he actually was a court reporter, and we honored him last night in our council meeting. For 50 years, he's been the reporter for county council and planning commission meetings. And, you know, I remember he used to sit there with one of those chronograph machines, and the minutes were much more detailed than needed to be, and so we're pulling that back. But with now technology, those items, it'll be a briefer discussion of what the content of the discussion was, but it'll have a timestamp link to the actual recording of that meeting. So if somebody wants to know what were they really talking about, they can timestamp it and go to the recording.
Yeah, so it actually a question. It really is the minutes and the recording together.
Question
back there.
When I was 3 minutes, they required that we post the audio in three days. And that minute, it wasn't approved, but we have to stamp across the minutes that we posted on the public meetings notice website, draft or unapproved minutes, each across the and we post it before they are approved because of some of the requirements of some committees. So has that changed? Is my
that is
because I catch that you have to post only approved minutes to the public meeting.
I have to look at the requirements of the law because it is recording records that are posted within the day or two.
I think 72 hours was huge.
And the approved minutes are posted basically as soon as they're approved. Sometimes the enforcement will meet up that often, and you might have minutes from a year ago.
Right.
Well, like today, next time we're going to approve the minutes for September.
I believe our policy is the recording has to be posted within 3 days, draft minutes within 30, minutes within 3 days of the board meeting.
Yeah, that's
how I
do it. And that's the law. It's
not
policy.
So if we put September minutes within 3 days, the non-draft version will be up.
Yep.
Okay.
Can the public grammar request closed meeting?
No.
They have to show that the meeting shouldn't have been closed.
Okay.
So, that yes, they can, but you have to show the meeting should not have been closed, and if that's the case, then the recording would be made public.
We do keep the recordings for all the closed meetings.
That is almost called a report.
You just don't post them. Same
way. Right. Can I grammar them?
Yeah. Sorry, exactly what you said. If it shouldn't have been closed.
Oh, okay. So no.
It would almost take court action to determine that no, you shouldn't have closed that.
The judge is going to listen to your recording of it.
Yeah. It boils down to this: you have to show that the meeting should not have been closed.
I see.
And if that's the case, then it would be open. But if closing the meeting was legitimate, then no. So it's a closed meeting. In fact, in some circumstances, the recording could be destroyed, but very, 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 very limited circumstances. That's what we never see.
The big one on that is when it's dealing with personnel.
Yeah.
That's the one you don't have to record, right?
You still record it, but the recording can be. Yes. That's the exception. The recording can be destroyed. Okay. Moving on. All right, electronic meetings. This, again, was changed last year. It was that we had to have, if there was an electronic meeting, we had to have what we called an anchor location. Now we don't have to have the anchor location if everyone agrees to participate electronically, and there is no request for in-person participation within 12 hours. In DWS, we've actually had a few meetings that are virtual only. No one has requested a in-person. If there is a request, we would set up I guess it would be the same as an anchor location set up in the downtown office. So the public and members can participate electronically, but it does come with a whole new set of etiquette rules, of course. Meetings conducted the same way. They're still recorded and they're still minutes. Okay, what happens if you don't? We've got to have some questions. It could void the action. You could, basically, the court could say, no, you can't, we can't spend that money. And citizens can sue for compliance. The closed meetings could be open. We talked about that. It could be attorney's fees, and a violation is technically a Class B misdemeanor. So, I'm aware of only one case that was reported. It was down in southern Utah. The Secretary of the Interior came to visit, and it was at least two county commissions, San Juan and Kane. Well, they had, of course, you know, county secretary comes, you want to roll on the red carpet. But they had the meeting, and it was the advocacy group pointed out, said, you didn't, that was a meeting of the board, of the commissions, the two commissions, and it wasn't, they didn't follow the public meetings out. They didn't give a notice and an agenda because they discussed things within within the business of the county, that use the public lands in the county. So the court agreed that the act was violated. I'm not sure what came of the meeting was held, but there was at least, just to be aware that people are paying attention. All right. So just a few on conducting meetings. To stay on the agenda. have you ever been to a meeting where all of a sudden get off on some tangent? Where you saw it, you get off on some tangent,
Never.
Stay on the agenda.
Never.
In fact, in a parliamentary procedure, it's called call for the orders of the day. Okay, let's stop talking about the basketball tournament. Let's focus on the business here. So, allow the public to make comments, even if you disagree with them or they're making some bizarre statement. Keep track of the motions and the votes. along with that, make sure that everyone knows what they're voting for. This was the state legislature several years ago. They passed some law that unintended consequences, that all this stuff started happening, and it was on the news. And had a member of the state senate with his goofy grin on his face saying, I guess we didn't read that one. So be careful what you're voting for. And it helps with the public to explain what we're doing. I've heard this over and over again. Like, oh, they had the meeting. They wouldn't let us talk. Like, well, that was the part of the meeting where we don't do comments. So explain what's going on. And finally, be the grown-up. Okay, we're also supposed to talk about conflict of interest. Really quickly. It is an interest in an entity that receives benefits from or is regulated by a public body. So if you're representing a group that is applied for a grant that comes before this board, it's probably best to recuse yourself. I use the example of my brother, was on the water board, local water board. We have a ranch, and so we use the water. But one of the things the water board does, they determine how much water anybody gets. So does he have a conflict? Yeah, he's on the board, and he gets to decide how much water everybody gets. He'll take it off. But is it impermissible? Because he is subject to the rules that the board makes. So if they decide this is the allocation of water, he is subject to that. So it's not an impermissible call.
But to be on the water board, you have to be a shareholder.
Yeah, that would.
So how do you get past everybody on the water board? It's just,
yeah, we wouldn't have anybody on the board. So.
Right.
But it's not a conflict. Now, it would be if the water board said, no, we're going to expand, you know, extend a line that's going to directly serve his property. That possibly he'd get caught because he was standing. Anyway, and I put down the bottom TMI. You know, TMI means too much information. That does not apply in conflicts of interest. It is better to ask. If you're not sure, please ask us. We'll work it out. Okay, that's
any questions? Any other questions? Thank you, Elliot. That was well done. The other two parts is oath of office and conflict of interest. I think we have a, is this part of this?
That's your conflict of interest, yes.
We notarize the oath of office. That we need to fill out. And
is there an oath of office paper in our?
I've got ones here for our new members.
Yeah. Oh, just for the new members?
Just for the new members.
That's just for who do we have that's new?
Well, we have Gail's online, so you can't.
Yes. This meeting conflicted with several other meetings before this was scheduled, but in the future, if I have a scheduled CDBG policy meetings, I will make sure I'm attending.
Appreciate that. And we have.
So if you get the oath of office form and have to sign it.
Okay. Ink or blood?
Both.
Okay.
And Mayor Ben Wagner, this is a new term for him, so he'll be taking the
anybody
oath.
Need, is that what these are new for?
That too.
If anybody needs a pen.
Anybody needs a pen? Okay. 8 minutes to allow a conflict of interest.
You don't. This? Yeah, you don't. Oh, that's you. And even if you filled out half the form, we need one. Correct, Elliot?
Well, technically, no. It only if it's changed.
Only if it's changed. Only if it's changed.
Only if it's changed.
Only if it's
changed.
Oh, so if I have no change?
Yeah,
we're good. Yeah, if you have no change, then.
Well,
the more important thing is just be aware. Be aware of
it. This one here.
I don't have to close the suitcases with all the money I'm getting from the developer. That's what
I said. I was under the understanding that the disclosures have to be done every year.
The article
is only before you have a change.
We get points
that are when you start, when you first start,
it's just a conflict.
Commissioner, we do have some boards that is in their policy that they do it every year.
I double checked.
So I just always print them all for every word once a year. Kendall, there's some diet in the ice chest too if you want something cold.
Oh, it's.
Yeah, there's some cold ones in the ice chest there.
Thank you.
You bet. The sugar freeze on the right.
Is there a message in there?
No.
Right here.
I was trying to see what the card looked like to see if anybody in this room drove that car, but I can't tell which one it is.
I know there's no lights flashing, so I don't know whose it is.
Did anyone else fill out the new conflict of interest form that needs to be notarized?
Your term started January 1st.
Is that all I've been got?
Hey, we just need to have a
I was going to say, don't you have to speak the oath?
Yeah, I think you got to speak the oath. Right, Helen? Okay.
Perfect.
When you're ready, Commissioner Johnson,
you can just stand up and be official. If that's it.
Official.
Do you want to do Mayor Van Wagner at the same time? Have them both say it at the same time?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Fine.
I know, right? Why do it twice? Seth. Yeah. Insert name. You both can do it.
Did anybody else need to fill out a conflict of interest form? Commissioner Holmquist, I'll work with you to get all this paperwork.
That's great. I'm happy to do that.
Whoever's sitting on their keys or something.
Who's doing the oath?
I believe I read.
You ready to do the oath to these two?
We're supposed to oath the can't say either swear or. Okay. So I state name.
I agree, Jensen.
Having been elected or appointed to the office of the Community Development Block Grant Program Policy Committee, You solemnly swear or affirm that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Utah, and that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Frank Jensen, having been elected or appointed to the office of Community Development Block Grant Program Policy Committee, you solemnly swear or affirm that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Utah, that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Hi, Dan Downlander. I've been elected to the Community Development Block Grant Policy Committee member. You solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Utah, and I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity. Thanks, Kelly. All right, thanks, guys.
Mayor Jacobson has his hand up.
Yeah, I was just asking if you need a new conflict of interest form from me or not.
Has anything changed for you since the last time you filled one out?
No.
I think we're good then.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Next item on the agenda is the acceptance of our 2024 September meeting minutes. The minutes are in the packet. If an opportunity to look those over, are there any changes or corrections anybody like to make to the minutes?
Move that we accept the minutes as prepared.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to prepare the minutes as prepared and presented. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. All right. Thank you. CDBG Executive Orders and Bylaws Review. Get this. Zach might want to talk about this. It's indicated that they had an interesting time or some fun with the last round of nominations. They discovered that they needed two nominations for each region due to a previously underappreciated state executive order from the CDBG program. So the staff is requesting that the bylaws be amended to reflect the reality that we can better comply with the program requirements. Do you want to have any more information on this, Zach?
Yeah, I'm just going to show you what we're requesting, just so it's a little easier for us as staff to keep track of.
This is in the bylaws?
Yes, it's in our bylaws. 2.3, appointment of policy committee. Membership appointments to the policy committee shall be made by the governor upon receiving two recommendations. All I did was insert the word two, just so that way it's a little easier for staff to keep track of forward.
Prior, it just said recommendations.
Yep.
Receiving recommendation.
Right.
Any questions or discussion on that bylaw change? None, we'd accept the motion to
support.
I make a motion to approve the amendment by us.
And we have a motion to approve that amendment. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. Okay. Welcome to our all-time favorite topic, our CDBG method of distribution. The heck do you want to?
I'll jump in. Maybe find the right one.
Thank you.
So, just as a refresher, we did review method of distribution last September and accepted it for the next. Oh, I'm on the wrong one.
No.
We did accept it for the next 3 years, but I just wanted to take a minute to go over what method distribution looks like, just to get some members of the board and kind of a feel for what it is. So the method of distribution is broken into five parts. Every region receives a base allocation of around $400,000, and then using these four metrics, percent of the state's LMI population, average poverty rate in the region, how much pre-1980s housing there is in the region, and how many pre-applicants there are, will affect the weight of how much of those remaining funds will get out to each individual region. So everybody's guaranteed $400,000, and then 40% of whatever's left over goes through the formula for percent of state LMI population. 35% of the average poverty rate goes through the remainder, goes through this the poverty rate across the state. 15% of remaining funds after that 400,000 base go through and are distributed based on the percentages of each region and pre-approved applications. So we run this formula every year. Right now, we have not received our HUD, any notice from HUD about how much money we are going to be getting. So we just kind of go people back to a $5.5 million planning. A $5.5 million just as a kind of planning. We're usually somewhere right there in that region. Allegedly, the recently passed continuing resolution in Washington, what was that, a week or two ago?
Just last week.
Yeah, that's should cover our
last Friday. I just feel so much longer ago.
But that will contain the amounts that we will receive this year.
So you're saying 5.5, what's this 6.5 at the top of the?
I'm glad you asked.
So
what we do is every year as projects finish up, if they have any funds left over, we return those funds to the state and then put them into the pot for distribution out. Last year we had some 1.2, almost 1.3 million in funds that were either previously unallocated to other projects or had come back from a project successfully completing, having some funding left over.
That's in the green box there on the chart.
Correct. That's the green box. And then we run a formula. We take 3% plus 100,000 for state admin, comes out to about 265,000. That's what pays for staff time and us to get together. And then we add what's reallocated, and that gives us the 6.5 billion.
Right at the beginning, you mentioned that we followed this program, you said, for 3 years. When did that 3-year period start?
Last September.
This current.
So we're just starting the 3-year allocation, so it'd be 2028 before we maybe revisit this allocation.
Yeah. Okay. And it had been in place how many years prior to we meet? Extended it, but it had been in place for 4 years?
Five.
We're doing 5-year blocks?
So we've been doing 3-year blocks.
Okay. Now, I think unallocated funds, I think each region priced us if they have projects within their region. They first have an opportunity to reallocate those within their region before they come back to the state and unallocated.
That's what we try to do. But if funds are not able to be spent in the region, either they didn't get enough applications for projects or that's usually what happens is they get enough funds. Then they have been after the application season, they've been coming back to the state. We've been reallocating it. But we're going to talk about that in a little bit.
So I won't bring that up. I know we've tried to do that. We have a project that you didn't fully fund it for whatever point-wise, whatever, but we get money
back, we can maybe put a little bit more of that program that for that application that wasn't fully funded to try to spend it as much within our reach. And I think all regions would like to be able to do that as much as possible to keep it within their region. That was their money to spend.
Yes. So any questions from our new members?
You need a motion for that, or that's just informational?
You got it under promotion, so I guess the motion would be to approve the ongoing method distribution for this year.
Actually, there's another item on the agenda, the allocation of unspent funds. If that's okay.
That's part of this. Yeah, you got it under the same agenda item, so go ahead.
Okay. So, in the past couple of years, we've been trying to funds. So, normally what we do is at the end of the application cycle, if there's any funds left over, they just come back to the state and they sit in our accounts until the next application cycle. But my staff and I noticed in our application policies and procedures, we actually have a little policy byline that says, at the discretion of the state, we can remove unallocated funds from our region to deploy them towards projects across other areas. And so what I would like to propose to the board is that after an AOG goes through, a local Raving Ranking Committee goes through their projects, and if they have any funds remaining for whatever reason, state staff can take those remaining funds and try and fund projects throughout the state. So that way we can try and hit, that way we can try and reach our spend down goals, which is about the only metric that HUD is using to track how well the program is going out and also to try and make sure there's more projects funded. For example, this year, if we can do this, I'll be able to fund every project that is applied across every region. Jay.
Yeah, generally in support of this, right? A question that just comes to mind. So when we rate and rank, we come up with a list, and we usually have projects in the end that we do not fund.
Right.
So we could potentially receive other funds from a different region that had leftover money.
If there's conflict.
With that, we typically send award or notification of no award, right? Mm-hmm. Letters to those we rated and ranked. So is everybody going to line up their rating and ranking in the same month or time period, so that we're not sending a notification of no award to an applicant and then coming back and saying, hey, just kidding, we actually have money over here? Or how's that timeline going to work?
That's something that we have to figure out as state staff and working with the AOGs.
Yeah.
To make sure that we're consistent across the board.
We would have to either align rating and ranking timelines or come up with a letter that says right now our region is out of funds and could potentially receive funding from other regions in the state, something like that.
Yeah.
But you're right.
I appreciate what you're saying, Shay. I thought, didn't we have timelines set within the state that you have to have your rating done by a certain time?
We have a deadline for the end of August.
Yeah.
And typically the way that we enforce that as state staff is when your local ranking gets together and you do your rating and ranking, you send it to me and I review it. And then on my review, and it's not a review to say, oh, you did it right along. It's just for me to review and make sure I've got all the information. So that way we're in compliance with federal requirements. Then I turn around and I send out a work template letter that we use to notify people that they've been awarded, and there's some very specific verbiage that we have to use in that letter in order to stay compliant with some federal regulations. So what we would probably wind up doing is I would just send that all at once to every region. So you do your rating and ranking like normal, And then, for the end of March, April, I would send out the award letter template and the applicator rating.
So Jennifer, your suggestion that maybe that letter will be changed to say as of now.
Right.
So the ones that get the no,
if
no.
If we can't line up and have all of the rating rankings done around the same time and send all the letters, because by then, if we can do that, then we'll know, okay, this region has this much funding left over. If we can't line all of that up, then we're going to have to put something in the letter that says the region is out of funding. We could potentially receive funding from, you know, another region, but we don't know right now. Well, we can figure it out.
Yeah, but you already have the projects ranked, right? So if more funding becomes available, you know where that's going to go.
Exactly.
Right? So
maybe you had enough to rank four projects in your region. Number five might get ranked after more money.
You could say something like your project qualified and was approved by the committee. But we don't have the funding to fund it at this point, although funding may become available from another region if it's not used.
And one thing I will point out, the rating and ranking already has the reallocation, so like from the main pot.
Right.
But then as I'm reviewing rating and rankings, let's say that, Fife County has $1 million coming in, but they only have $800,000 worth of projects. What I would do after I review their rating and ranking is then I would know, okay, we got 200,000 coming from here. I could then potentially notify that river, hey, you've got one project here that you weren't able to fund because you ran out of money, but I could potentially transfer funds up here. Now, of course, each AOG gets first crack at their money, right? That I don't want to say that. You know, an individual rating and ranking won't get this method of distribution. All that we would be proposing is that after all the ratings and rankings are done, then if there's money left over, we could transfer it from region to region to fund good and even projects.
You had in a minute meeting, whatever, that you're using LMI criteria to do that to determine, okay, that extra 200,000 is going to Bear River and not Fife County or by whatever, right?
Well, our this year it wouldn't be a big deal because I could fund everything. But if we came down to a potential, I don't have enough money to fund every project, we would then just look at the LMI beneficiaries as a percentage of the population. Where are we going to get the most bang for our buck? But do it in such a way that, you know, a small town and a bigger town will be on equal footing.
That he's transferring here and not here.
So if money is not spent, if it's been allocated to a AOG for the region, but it's not spent and it returns back into the pot, does that money then get reallocated proportionately to the distribution method?
That would be our
next year. But you're trying to use it as quickly as you can.
That's what this
for the HUD. They're watching. You know, they want it to be spent down.
Correct.
To that report.
That's what this green box is. Right. The thing is that couldn't be reallocated. So now it's going to be redistributed across the.
According to the method of distribution.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then the little caveat that we're asking for here is after everybody's rated and ranked. Before the end of the application cycle, when we would then just bring it all back and put it in the pot for next year, we would see if there are projects that we could fund.
Sure.
And if there were more projects that we could fund in another region, but they ran out of money, we would just put it there. So that way, every project that we could potentially fund would get funded.
But preference would be given to the region in which the money was originally allocated.
Yes.
If there's preference there.
Yeah, it's a two-tier. So first tier is this method of distribution. So you would get first stash. So you get three applications in plus AOGs, and you're able to spend all of it. Fantastic. No worries. But if you're not able to spend all of it, then if we could, we take that funding that you couldn't spend anyway because you didn't get enough applications, put it in another project.
Yeah.
And then the next year, you just get your regular method. You get your regular allocation, no worries, including anything that we were unable to spend or anything that came back to stay.
Right. With the remaining, let's say we've funded everybody, there's two projects from the Uinta Basin, one from the sixth county, one from five. Will we, like those four projects, would we rank them in order so that the best or the one? I mean, and what would that ranking system be?
I think they're using LMIs right now to decide which of those gets that.
If there wasn't enough funding to fund them all, which one of, how would we rank those to get, you know, to start 1, 2, 3, 4?
We would look at the percentage of LMIs, the overall population. So let's say one project would be small town and 65% of the town is LMI. Then they'd say, you're at 65, then, and if that was our highest ranking one, even though it's a smaller town, they would be on equal footing, let's say, a bigger town.
So there'd be some sort of a way to do that, so yeah. Not just randomly.
No.
Okay.
I mean, like, my first goal would always be to fund everything. But the second goal would be we just go for the largest percentage of LMI.
Commissioner, did you have something to add?
Shay?
Yeah, I can jump in unless there's something on there.
Sorry, it sounded like he wanted to jump in and then now he's not, so go ahead.
I was just going to say, we read in rank over 2 weeks ago. We still have not received notification letters sent out, partially in part because we have a couple of projects in question, right?
Correct.
That being said, there's obviously a margin there for notification. So if we're all rating and ranking within the same month, it makes sense to me to not have to build in a different system. We're already using the margin, right? Yeah. We're already doing it. So
we wouldn't. Whatever we did, I would not want to reinvent it. No.
Yeah. So if we're already, like if we can all rate and rank within a month period, we have a couple of weeks on the margin already to build in.
We're rating and rank on Monday, this coming Monday.
Yeah, so we're all doing it March-ish.
March, the requirement by March 31st, y'all get me somewhere late February to early March or mid-March, so it's fine.
Is there a list of projects that I can get a hold of just to see what sort of things get funded?
Sure. I can send you one.
And great.
You mean in your AIG, AOG, Gail, or
open? I'm just looking across the board saying that, not that we differ that much in some of our needs, but it would give an idea because I don't think we have very many applicants this year. And so, but I don't know that. So it'd be nice to find out what kind of things counties ask for and projects that are worthy of being applied for. So my area, but any area would be great.
I think I found over the years each AOG has kind of their own needs within their AOG. For example, Mountland, our rating ranking scoring is oriented probably more to water and sewer projects, because that's the needs of all the small communities in our two county area, Wasatch and Summit County. Where another one, I know one of the AOGs down south had housing rehab and such was their kind of their priority. So they built that into their rating ranking scoring system to push the funds to the projects that they had a greater need for in their AOG. Am I reading that right from your other AOG, what you're doing?
You can also find some of what has been funded in the application policies and procedures book. General, and I had been working in the past in the website called fsrs.gov, and that's where a lot of the grants are listed in different regions throughout the state. They are listed, the type of project and how much funding it was, and where those funding went into different areas of the small cities program in the state of Utah.
Thank you.
Jennifer?
Yeah, we also have a list, a five-year list on our jobs.utah.gov website. I think Nicole was updating that every year. It's got a list of, for the last 5 years, projects that were funded.
I don't need to
link it
to that, Commissioner.
Okay, super.
Anything not out there, but yeah. Why not? Add it with that as a PowerPoint.
Thanks. Y'all are getting a lot from me. This
awesome. Hey, we're going to make you earn your pay.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So, Zach, I think I know the answer to this. I think we may have previously discussed it. So, what are the chances of just rolling over monies within the AOGs?
So, unfortunately, because of the way that the spend down requirement works and the way that our method of, geographic distribution, so it's from the Commonwealth. So, one of the things that we have to do as a state is put together what's called a consolidated plan, which is basically we tell HUD, hey, here's our plan, how we're going to spend these funds. And because we have we distribute the funds to each AOG. And we kind of almost treat yours like a separate little mini pot of money. The geographic distribution doesn't allow for it to roll over year to year. It has to come back to the state for our compliance with the requirements of that consolidated plan and the exact plan that we made for HUD. So I don't believe that we could write it to such a way that it saves that money. We'll be able year to year to each AOG, because we need to keep that compliance with our consolidated plan at the state level.
Okay.
It sounds like they're doing the best job they can to
spend
it in that region first.
Yeah. Well, correct. I'm saying this is probably the second best, is to make sure that if any of us have any left over, that somebody in the state gets it. We don't have to send it back to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, that's what we would prefer.
So it sounds like this is the second best, for all of us.
Given our guidelines to hire up.
And we've said this several times, one of our concerns at the state level is if we don't start spending all of this funding, they're not going to see the need for the funding in BC and could potentially cut it. So.
Yeah. I agree.
I kind of understand that. Yeah. You got a good point there.
And we also want to make sure that we can give it to projects that can spend it right away. Instead of projects that are going to take three years to spend, and then it's still going to be sitting there. In the past, we've given money to Washington Terrace because we know that they can spend it right away. Leftover money from other projects, from other regions, we've given it to Washington Terrace because they always turn around that money by the end of the contract term. So those are kind of things that we want to look at as well for a region to get money just to be able to spend them down right away, show all the money.
Okay, any other discussion or question on this item? Do you want the method distribution and the reallocation unspent funds? Is that the motion you need?
Just for the unspent.
But we want to do one on the distribution, or did we do that? We were partly through that when you.
We're good on the discussion. We've done that in September. We could make another motion and reset.
Okay. Okay. So we need a motion on the plan that staff has put forth on the reallocation of unspent funds.
I'll make a motion for the reallocation of unspent funds as presented by the staff.
Okay. And a second. Any other discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Good discussion on that. Hopefully we all understand. We that
Thank you. This will make our hitting our spend numbers as a state a lot easier, and we'll be able to fund a few more projects every year.
So next item is our 2025 regional allocations based on the formula we've just looked at. Mm-hmm. And then CD funds plan to allocate remaining funds there. So
this is where we need the motion for
this is showing the money.
Yep, correct. This is the latest for what we've gotten from, BWS Finance, what we have in the current planning for our 2025, give or take. According to the national organization that the state's part of for state officers, for state community development block grant funds, we shouldn't see any reduction in CDG funds from the CR 15 resolution. So,
anybody have a question on the amount allocated to their region based on this chart? I look on here, this mountain land 687.49, but in the notes you got the 714.
Thank you for pointing that up. DWS Finance got back to me this week. There was a project that we had that hadn't been calculated correctly in the numbers they gave me, and they corrected them. So what's on the sheet is the accurate numbers.
These are the accurate numbers?
Those are the accurate numbers that the entire board has.
So this was wrong.
That was wrong when I sent it.
Okay. And then the other part of that is you have to get it all out right time, right? The CD funds.
Our HUD representatives have been encouraging us to spend the last bits of our CD funding. There's a couple projects this year that we could throw the CD money at and still be in compliance with need. What's that called, Jen? The PPR tieback event?
Prepared, prevent, respond.
Yeah. Even though, I don't know, how many years has it been since COVID was a thing?
2020.
But we have been encouraged to spend it. And there's a couple projects we could put CB money to. I will point out that CB money does not have Build America, Buy America requirements on it. So we're going to try and throw them at some projects that meet that requirement that meet the requirements of the CV funding, but that would also benefit from not having to worry about Build America, Buy America. So we would like permission from the board to try and utilize the remainders of those funds. The way that we would plan on doing it as staff is just looking at individual projects across what we have applied for this year, and if they can meet the requirements of CD, we'll just fund them with CD funding.
Rather than CDBG?
It's still CDBG, it's just...
That's portion of it.
Yeah. And with that CD money, we'll still be able to fund everything across the state. That's been a point for us. So, not bad here.
So each AOG, have you been notified? They've been notified? You're aware of what's coming from me on that?
We haven't talked about it with anybody yet, because our plan is that we're just going to administratively do it in the background. So unless a grantee hears from us that, hey, we're using CV money for this, so I just need you to sign this letter, and then we'll go from there.
What's the amount?
What's the amount?
We have some...
You have 721,070 in there.
Yep, that's what we got. 721.
So what if that project's been rated and ranked in an AOG, and then you say, well, we're going to spend it here. That screws up the rating ranking scores.
It wouldn't affect their rating scores. We plan on just doing this administratively. So we get the rating and ranking, and the score is done. And we get that into the state, and then whatever projects we would have, like a project, we could say that this is part of a
a prevent scenario. We would just put CB money into that.
Is there but if they were getting money from the CDBG money because of rating and ranking, and they said, well, you don't need to use the air, we're going to use this money instead, does that just distort the rating ranking?
No, it wouldn't distort the rating ranking.
So we would take all projects statewide, everything for this year, pull them all up, see which ones we could tie to a prevent, prepare, or respond tie back. And then we would use the CB funds for that project, and that funding that's being replaced with CB funding will be rolled over as part of the reallocation to go to fund other projects that need that funding. It wouldn't affect rating and ranking at all. It wouldn't affect the gap. There would be no effect there.
Yeah.
We do have to, so for auditing purposes, we're working on a letter. We'll draft a letter on our end, like the prepare, prevent, and respond to COVID. And we will need to send that letter to the grantees to sign. We'll need that for that documentation needs for auditing. Like, how does this project prepare for prevent and respond?
And then one other thing that we have to keep in mind with these funds, they will have to be returned to the Treasury by middle of June in 2026. So that's why we didn't want to distribute this through the OMG, so that's normal.
We have a year.
We have a year, so we want to kind of select projects that are ready to go.
Ready to go. Shovel ready.
And I think as long as they are awarded,
yeah.
You don't have to spend by putting some sit as long as it's been awarded and allocated, and I get it.
Okay.
If it's in the work, in other words.
And show me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Specific to RAOG, we had questions on self-certification on the project this year. These funds potentially being utilized for that specific project, does it replace the need for a new policy on self-certification, or are we still having the conversation on self-certification?
We're actually going to talk about that when we talk about the grantee handbook, and I'll get into it then. In short, it's a possibility.
Okay, so you need a motion on this. Any other discussion on this item? But I understand what's happening now with that. Get that CD money out and spent.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Gail. What's up, Larry?
I've been allocated 20 dumb questions. I'd like to use one of those now.
Such thing as a dumb question, so long as the question is earnest.
I see here a number for Fife County of 1,072,000. Is that what could be allocated in future, requests, and or is that what we've already spent last year, or is this a allocation for like 2025's process?
That's what you'll be doing, your rating and ranking allocation to that amount.
So.
For the 25-year.
Yeah, I see it says at the very top, the program allocation. I just want to make sure that was the number. And granted, if we get some applications that come into 800,000, then the remainder could be reallocated by into different areas, which would be great.
That's the plan.
And then when do these applications, what are they due, and how do we get them the word out, so to speak?
So application season's open somewhere around October 1st.
Okay.
And then as the policies are written now, the applications cycle closes on January 31st following that. So the next time we will open up applications will be October 1st of this year, and we'll be playing the 2026 funding from the federal government.
Gotcha. Okay. That's great. That helps. Thank you.
Okay, so we for this agenda item, are there any more questions?
we need a motion to approve or authorize staff to go ahead with the CB funds and their plan to allocate the remaining funds to those projects for the prepare, respond, and recover.
I'll make that motion to have the staff approve the CB funds as discussed.
Second.
Okay, any other discussion? Not? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Would you like to break for lunch now or after the next agenda item?
It's on the agenda. How long is application review, Zach?
We're just going to do a round table at the GGs and talk a little bit about how the application cycle went for them this year. So we could break now. We could break then.
What's your preference, board?
Stay on the agenda.
Okay, you're done. Let's do the agenda. Great. Thank you. So let's start with Wasatch Front, Mark.
Oh, or Christine. I'm just an elected official. I don't know what you're 42 civil people.
We had a similar application cycle as we've had the last couple of years. A lot of input from communities that the application process is too daunting and they, you know, didn't want to do it. So we've been trying to work specifically with communities to cultivate projects. We did have one kind of heartbreak not get submitted on time, and we have, you know, big plans for a big chunk of money to go to the applicant. So that was disappointing, but we're hoping next year that will come through and we'll have the opportunity to spend the rest of our funds and not to jump too far ahead on the agenda, but especially we've had to state that hopefully we'll make the application cycle process easier and be able to get more cities willing to take on CDBG. But all in all, we had one multi-year grant that's being paid off from last year, and then we had three other applications that are all being fully funded.
But we're ending up with a lot of extra money. We'll pass along to somebody, some lucky person.
My turn. We had seven applications outside of the three from the AOG, so 10 total. We're still short money, so we'll gladly take anybody's money in Washington.
Oh, geez, here we go. Write a check. Just be writing a check.
Wayne County is doing an ambulance. Signals and greenhouse, Lindell's water pump, Manti, it's senior center improvements. Levan is pickleball court, Alliance Park improvements in Sevier County is doing food bank improvements. So that's kind of what our bucket plan. Even though we have several applications, we still have general same thoughts from applicants that you expressed, right? That we're struggling to push people to get to apply. We really are having to do a ton of the work for them to get those applications in, essentially doing everything for them, like driving out to their town hall, posting it, and going to their public hearing to make sure that they say everything, like walking, baby, like holding their hand, essentially, right? So hopefully we can make some program changes. I know we're working on that again to advertise those to applicants so that they're more inclined to participate. Sure, but
thanks, Shay. Are you in the other AOGs? Are you seeing that same problem that Shay? Is there anything we can do from the state down or whatever to help with that? I know we've got a grant writer that works through MAG, but basically Summit Wasatch County. And that's one of the things we had is these people apply for grants, and she's grant writers are a gift. You find a grant writer, and this gal is terrific. But she's so dedicated and committed to it. She does the work for the ones that receive the grant that they ought to be doing. This very thing you're talking about with PDBG. If they've applied for it, they need to do the work. So what do we want a discussion? Does anybody any ideas?
This is my first program year, so I have lots of, I don't know, it was a lot, so I understand the small towns not wanting to apply. even helping them through, I was like, oh, I would take back books with questions to ask them, but. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I put on the spot, but we have four.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just, you were looking at me. I thought you had something.
That's okay. No, I wish I did.
Well, I think that it is kind of me jumping ahead on the agenda and CDBG implementation review. In January, we started talking with some AOG representatives to kind of just figure out what are the pain points for potential grantees applying, and start discussing ways that we could potentially make it a little easier, make it better. We've looked at everything from maybe changing the timeline looking at the very requirements from the federal government and seeing what can we do to maybe make it easier, either as AOG or state or whoever, but then also make sure that we still build the terms that we are required to under the federal regulations. Nothing set in stone yet. We've talked about things like potential grantees get a engineer on retainer, setting up a way for them to make it really easy for a retainer. My staff and I have been talking about maybe putting together videos that just we literally walk them through, click here, push this button, and now they have just something that they can follow on that's authoritative. Breaking up our training materials to give them a more digestible one. We're just looking at all the different possibilities because this year, it was kind of the same as last year, seeing a decrease in the number of applications coming in. We're seeing a hesitancy to finish applications or even get started at the state level. We're working on things to try and make it better. If we can get this current citizen participation plan through, it's the document that governs how we're supposed to do public hearings for the state. We can get it through HUD. We can drop the newspaper requirements. So we're looking at all these little things. To potentially make it easier, and we're looking at the AOG staff, and we're looking to bring something to
the board. A quick question. What are the hang-ups that are traditional? Is it that they ask for accounting-type questions that some of the smaller counties or groups may not be able to answer, or are they... In my opinion, somebody says, hey, we don't have an ambulance, but we have people dying. Give us the money. But it's got to be obvious, very complicated. But I'm just wondering if some of the questions are so sophisticated or require a grant writer. Is that the holdup?
The holdup are the federal regulations around the program. I will say I have several different programs, federal programs under my purview now, and CDBG is probably one of the hardest when it comes to federal regulations. And
gotcha. So
when Zach talks about putting the work group together, that's what we're going to look at what are the actual federal regulations that we have to have in place, and what have we as state added to that? What can we take away? The program hasn't been looked at in years and years. It's just around the exact same way without really looking at the structure and any sort of changes. So,
well, the only thing I heard from our area from Brian Thuriot was that there were several that were asked, are you going to apply for something? They knew of some needs that would qualify, and they said, it's too hard. We're not doing it.
And it depends on what the needs are. I mean, it's easier to go buy something, an ambulance, than it is to build something.
Yeah.
And so that deters a lot.
So if we can, what they're doing.
If we could simplify that, the whole process, but that, yeah, just the difference between those two things.
Hey, Julie?
I don't think it is grant writing that is needed. It is the capacity for the small towns to carry out the project throughout the duration of the project. It is that time that there are a lot of HUD requirements that needs to be compliant with. So it is getting a right person to manage the project. And in our grantee handbook, and I talk about this in the grantee workshop, is that they are allowed to get a project manager, whether it's an engineer, and we always suggest the AOG, because it won't cost that too much money, yeah, AOG reps, to manage their project. And they are allowed up to 10% of their grant to manage that. But I don't see it, them taking advantage of getting somebody who can manage your project. I don't see that very much. It's usually when I call for information, it's the mayor's wife answering the phone and telling me, I'll wait for the mayor, he's out getting the hay before the winter falls. And so that tells me the kind of capacity that is at the local level for small cities and towns. And that's where I'm like, you need to get a project manager to help you throughout the life of the grant.
Yeah, in my comment, I wasn't suggesting that y'all get a grant writer. I was using that to kind of support what Shay was saying, that they apply, but then I recognize it's a challenge getting that all put together. But Cody, you had a...
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same line. These small towns, they just don't have the capacity. I mean, the town clerk runs the whole town a lot of these times. I agree with what Julie's saying, but on the other hand, I mean, that's what they're kind of relying on the state staff for some time, right? Once they get the grant, they should be coming to you for like help.
They do, and we are there. But
so, and then it's frustrated. What frustrates a lot of my grantees is they'll apply, and then they're denied on the technicality because they missed some verbiage in a form or something. And so they're like, well, why are we going through hours of work and we missed one word and we get denied? And so they do that year after year after year and keep getting denied. And they're like, we're not doing it anymore.
Those are the things we really want to look at.
Yeah, and it's frustrating. That's a frustrating thing for these small companies when they don't have the time anyways because they're so strapped.
And then, well, most of them all have a day job.
Right.
And so, yeah.
So it's the town clerk or town reporter that's doing everything plus this. And then that with the AOG staff, we're doing what we can to help them. We have 39 communities or 19 communities that we're doing that for as well.
But if there's a potential of 10%, that could put on an extra AOG staff.
It could.
You know, to kind of walk.
But that's a limit. That's a limited 10% for each community. Yep.
But it is something we'd like to look at. And, your comment, those technicalities about the project, that's what we're looking at. We need to see what can we do to get through. Because, I mean, like, federal regulations, we have to respect them. But maybe there's another way to tackle this.
But still follow the federal guidelines.
We go through that with them in a couple of clients, step by step by step. We're there to take off. Don't send it to me before. A lot of times they don't do that.
So. Yeah. Shay?
Does the 10% that you can pull off per project go towards the 20% admin and planning?
It would.
So why not just put additional admin and planning dollars rather than try to pull off each project?
That would have to be a you know, let's talk about that one. I don't know. We have to figure out how to structure that, but there might be an option there. But we would, at the end of the day, you know, we do have that in policy. You can take up to 10% of a project in admin, so long as we don't get that 20% cap.
Is that included in the, is anticipation for 10% per project being included in the 12% that we're going to be sitting in it?
No.
Okay.
It's only if someone asks for it, and then it's only if, and then it's only if, so just to kind of do the end on the shape, we have a cap of 20%. We can only take up to 20% of our, whatever we get from HUD in a given year,
allocation
of our allocation at the state level. We can only use up to 20% of the state for like admin planning. And then we filter that down to each region, and we hold that 20% in the region. Percentage cap that we're referring to pays for like the AMGM and planning contract.
That's part of that 20%.
That's part of that 20%. And so what we try to do as much as possible is stay far, far away from that 20% cap. And so usually, like if a project comes in and they're requesting $10 million, mm-hmm. usually it's like, oh, you're putting in money too? Great, you're paying for that part. So that way we can show that we're not using CBG to pay for planning that.
Okay, now let's go to that 10% we're talking about, mm-hmm. the AOG.
That could potentially go if the AOG had like a contract or an MOU or something that showed that there was this sort of relationship between the project and the AOG.
But they come to the grantee, not directly to the AOG.
They have to pay like the contract.
And let's say that we're planning on having our LLA. LAA, step in and help. But I know that our region probably has less communities than other regions, and so maybe that won't be an option, but that's our plan.
That might be a pretty good idea because every region gets LAA.
Yeah,
dot com. Nice.
Perfect.
Are all of the applications online?
Yes, we only do online applications.
Can you send me one? I'd like to get good at this and help our people, but.
Absolutely. I'll send you a copy for you.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll just send one to the whole
board.
I'll just send it.
You're going to be busy. Thanks. Any other comments or questions on this? I appreciate this side discussion that I kind of started based on Shay's comment.
And we just know that.
Well, I know we did.
I don't know where this comes in. But the survey issue of site surveys or town surveys, anybody ever tried to knock on people's door?
LMI survey.
Do a survey, LMI survey, yeah. Anybody ever tried to do that? I did that last year. Helping out.
You did it yourself?
Well, I helped out, yeah.
That's a good way to get people out the door.
I mean, people don't open
They don't.
Next time, people won't open the door. They won't take your envelope. You show them. You say, this is all you need. Don't even put your name on it. And they seal it up and they put it on their porch, come back. Christy opened a couple up and they were blank. They say, what do we do? What's wrong with the census?
So we use a special tabulation. HUD uses a special tabulation that we then use that can change year to year. They break it down by census block and by jurisdiction. And so depending on how the wonderful black magic of statistics, I don't even bother to try and understand it. My wife is a master's degree, and she has a lot of statistics as part of it. So if anything comes up, I just go to her, and I'm like, please explain the black magic. That statistical analysis is what determines a predetermined community. But that can only work for community-wide projects. If we wanted to do something in a specific area, that's where we have to do surveys. But we could also add that to the list of things to take a look at. Maybe there are alternative ways, because if they're not opening the door.
Yeah.
So we've got to find ways to prove that the people in that area are, in fact, low to moderate.
So you know whether they're ill or not, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. And I,
yeah, that's like potential houses.
There may be other ways that we haven't connected yet. Address, okay.
All right. Yeah, going on. What we were doing. You guys, I guess, Chris, your turn. We were talking about application review for your region.
This is my first CDB program cycle, and I did learn a lot. I'm ready. I feel more prepared for next year, but we have 4 applicants. Moab City, we turned out, they didn't spend down 50% of their last year, so it was deemed ineligible. And then Emory Town made a motion in their public hearing, which made me really sad, so.
But that's jumping through the hoops. It's a simple mistake for the city.
Yeah. So they're better prepared. They are they work full-time jobs. They're in the office like 2 hours a day, and they didn't really have the time or the bandwidth to do it. So next year will be better for their project. But Green River applied for some engineering design work to revitalize their main street. And there's a housing development in Moab called Royal Property with Moab Community Land Trust that partnered with Grand County to do some infrastructure for their low to moderate income. So that one is at the top of our screen and ranking list that we'll work with them.
Good. You want to go now, Zach, or should we go on around and
I covered everything that I did.
You've done your thing?
So we're good.
So we actually had more than we got initially, but then because of two different technicalities, and what ended up being the one would have erased it anyway, but the one inadvertently forgot to publish in the newspaper. So that threw out 2 projects, unfortunately. So, again, I think, and the one for the LMI survey, this is my first year as well, so I had a misunderstanding. And I think as far as feedback to the state, that's where one of those things where it's like he's same thing. Like, he volunteers his time. He's just doing it on his off hours. He's tried to apply 3 different years. This was his 3rd year. And the LMI survey came back. I mean, they had 93% LMI, but we didn't get a large enough sample size. And that was meeting the state's deadline. And I feel like we could have, if we had had that week to he would have gone out and gotten the rest. We just needed a total of 10 people, not even households, just 10 people. In order to get it, and the lowest that the LMI would have been was 73%. So in that case, that was frustrating. That was definitely a mistake on my part to not have known that. But when it came down to it was the state's deadline that held us captive, as opposed to HUD's deadline. That was one of those times where I feel like the state could have had some leeway with it, where this guy is, literally, he's just volunteering his time, doing it for the community. Trying to get it done, and that's one of those things where I'm like, let's have some common sense in what, I understand following HUD's regulations, like in Utah County, we do the entitlements, and I get that, but it's like, this was just an arbitrary state deadline that we could have met in the end, like the overall end deadline could have been met, but anyway, that might be the feedback is. Just the frustration with those kinds of things. So,
hey, Tony, 5 County.
So we didn't get any applications from our communities this year. We had about 20 days to attend the outdoor flies. I thought we were going to get some interest, but when it came down to it, and so the AOG actually applied for a land purchase. My director wants to. We have services up in Cedar City, and we're in 4 different locations that we're paying rent. And he wants to purchase a land and be like a centralized building there. services they depend on. So we were going to purchase some land there. So we applied.
Hey, Cody, I'm so sorry. The mic is just barely picking you up.
Sorry, I've been sick. And my
I'm so sorry.
Shot. But anyway, so the ALG applied for the bulk of the funding for a land purchase to bring in those, to hopefully build a building in the future and bring in those services to the units.
Great. Good.
There's precedent there in the R6 that we used CDBG to build my land to build their buildings. That's,
Kevin, you're in the basin.
So for our region, housing is a big issue. Our AOG every year applies for single-family housing rehab funding to help support that. But in addition to that, Vernal City was our only applicant outside of us that applied for a multi-year project to improve some infrastructure in a low-income area to put in some sidewalks and some sewer lines and water lines. And that's
all right, Brittany, Bear River, she on?
Yeah, there she is. Good.
Yep, I'm on.
Atta girl. Thanks, Brittany.
Yeah, no problem. So for Bear River region, we had 5 total applicants. One of our small communities ended up dropping out completely, and then we had one of them was disqualified due to insufficient public notice. So similar to what the other AOGs are talking about of just having a public notice and one of the things being incorrect on there and then them losing the opportunity to get funding altogether. We had another applicant who was disqualified. They just simply did not get their application submitted in time. And the third final applicant that was disqualified was also due because of they were in an entitlement area. So the project beneficiaries for that area were going to benefit from an entitlement area versus how CDBG the applicants to be funded.
Hey. Any other remembered anything we forgot? If not, we'll come back to Zach for a little wrap up and a couple of, I should say, issues.
Yeah, no, just we're about to go into ranking season where you'll be reviewing your policies. And so I'm just going to put out my usual plug. Put something, if I can talk you into it, put something in your policies that recommends they hold a public hearing by a certain date, January 15th, for example. So that way, you know, if there are issues, you know, in that public hearing, we can catch them by that date or another date that works better for your AOG. And then the other thing is just, I think most everybody has removed the cap. You want the cap? Okay. I think most everybody has. You still have a cap?
We still have a cap. Are you talking about when you know?
Yeah. Just either raise it or eliminate it.
We've raised it the last 2 years in a row.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, do what works for your area, but at the state level, we are encouraging you to.
We're going to review that summer when we review our ready ranking policy.
But just to maybe that serve as an enticement to people for product to go through all these kind of requirements. In addition to everything else that we'll look at, talking state staff and AMG reps.
Shay?
Yeah, if we have our working group come up with a different timeline, obviously those will have to be lining up with everybody's ready to make them and those may be implemented in the next policy meeting. So are we asking people to hold off on their grading and ranking, or are we just going to do an amendment if we end up implementing the new timelines?
Depending on how our next few working group meetings go, we'll be working with Kendall to maybe call on summer meeting, depending on how that goes. Just the CDG implementation review, like how we've been talking about.
Down here, yeah.
So House and AMG reps and staff have been looking to examine the program as we get going, if we identify things that could potentially change and make it a lot easier.
I would think, in answer to your question, it won't be soon enough for this budget cycle.
It would be for next year.
Yeah, cycle. For the 26th year.
And if we need to, I might work with you to call it. But we're shooting for September anyway.
Okay, there's no other questions or comments on that. Let's go ahead and break for lunch. We'll come back and take a look at Franny Handbook. Any directions on lunch, you guys? Go ahead. Reconvene.
We'll talk.
Thanks, you guys, for the good lunch. Our next item is the 2025 Grantee Handbook for Workshop.
So, I put a copy of the handbook in front of everybody. One thing you'll notice is we're skinning up the book a little bit. Where we can, we're trying to take stuff and put it on the website where it makes sense. And also we are trying to rework that website to make it a more usable tool for branches. If we just kind of look at the list, here are things that we are proposing updating. Really, not too much. I'll just correct it.
Yeah, go ahead.
In section A, I just updated the table of contact, the table of contact information, added, new reps and new staff. In section B, we added verbiage that when there is a change in the grantee's project management. So, it starts with the clerk, but the clerk can't continue the project for whatever reason, so they're going to assign a little council member. We just ask that be in writing, letter edits, so that way we can track that change.
That is yellow?
Yes. No, that's just the general ask.
You've highlighted it.
Yeah, it's a general ask that we give, and we put special emphasis on it, that if you are a project manager and you are an elected official. If a city is looking to select a project manager and it's not, say, paid staff or an outside consultant, and you want to use somebody like a city council member, please don't have them subject to an election in the next couple of years. Just a general.
Around long enough to complete the project.
That's what we're at. That's just a general thing that we ask. And we have to draw emphasis to it.
Okay.
Section C, we revised our review guidance. Last year we had a big old thick stack of notes. Now we just have our policies that need to be written out. And we've migrated most of our environmental review items to our website to better work with our environmental review specialists and that permission.
Okay.
The next thing, we added the CDBG contract portion, we had some requests from the Administrative Services Division. They're the folks that help us with our contracting and finance portion. They asked that we update some language to better align with their policy, such language just include changing from state contract and execution to state grant agreement. Just little things like that. Nothing serious. No policy changes, just nothing. Section E, we did add language requesting that payrolls be submitted on a weekly basis from contractors and clarified that administrative costs must be applied for in the initial application. So if somebody wants to take that 10%, tell us up front so that way we can start finding on it.
What is up front?
First application.
Okay. Just with them.
And then we also added at the very end of Section E a debt management policy for handling overpayments to align with the DWS policy. If we overpay somebody, we'll just work with them to make sure that comes back. But again, since we work on a reimbursement basis, that's pretty rare, if ever. Section F, we just added clarity for the list of public. We added on the checklist. That will be on the website.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you're in section. I'm sorry. So for section F, we just added some verbiage to talk about public noticing for procurement, to align with our citizen participation plan a little bit better. And then we added emphasis on the following items. The procurement must happen on a regular basis. That outreach to minority-owned and women-owned business enterprises must be documented, and that language to support the requirements for single-family housing programs solicit contractors. Just added some more emphasis to policies that are already in place.
And then the samples are in the website.
Yep. So all the samples have been added to the website or are in process. Section I, we just adjusted our monitoring checklist to reflect program needs better find statements. Section H had language around BABA compliance. Just basically told people when we're going to talk about Build America, Buy America with them. And then we also added the most up-to-date WH 347 form. That's just the payable form that you use on a construction project. And then the last one, Section J, we added language about ensuring that for entities fill out the correct closeout form. We've seen a couple of closeout forms come in where they checked that this was a slum and blight project. No, unless you know that it's a slum and blight project up front, just hit that line. Just better clarity on instructions. And then one other thing I'd like to talk to the board about, as part of motion for kind of changes to the handbook. We had a situation come up this year. Food Bank applied for CDBG funding. It's a pretty fantastic project. The only way that we could potentially certify them as providing a beneficiary to low to moderate income persons is we have to change a little piece of our policies and procedures. So in short, most of the time when we do income verification to prove that those persons that are receiving the services are indeed low to moderate income, they have to provide backup documentation, a pay stub, a bank statement, W-2, tax return, just something that verifies that they have. Well, food banks don't require that. Instead, they use what's called self-certification income verification forms where they just sign under threat of perjury that this is indeed their income, and they self-certify it, which is great for like USDA programs. It's a gray-ish area for CDBG. Gray in the sense that, yes, we technically can do it, but we have to have some written policies about this. And so we are asking to add a little bit of policy that says we allow the use of self-certification forms for food banks and food banks only, as long as they meet a certain standard. That certain standard being they meet all the requirements that are required from about that form, which includes they use correct income limits for the area for HUD's purposes, as a under threat of penalty of perjury statements, and are approved for use by the staff.
So this would be an addition to our how to apply handbook for book.
Yeah, it would go here. It would go into the how to apply handbook.
For 26.
For 25. And it would show up into 26.
Yeah, because we've already done.
Yeah. If this would just, we never had policy related to the use of cell certification forms, and it would be a useful thing this year to add into our policies. I also double checked with DWS legal, and it is something that we can legally do. We just have to have the written policies, so we would add it into the Apply handbook, because that's the place it would make the most sense to put it in.
Okay.
Mayor Jacobson would like to know, are all of the recommended changes consistent with federal requirements?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Just like he said, a lot of stuff that used to be in this bigger handbook is now online, so it's still there. Just they don't have to print it up every year.
Yeah. I spent about $13,000 printing our last round of handbooks. And while I will be more than happy to continue to provide that, if I can figure out how to get that cost down, because that's more money for state admin, so we can do other things.
We won't online. It's easier to make a change if you need to.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Thank you, too.
Any other questions on the, changes? No, we need a motion to accept the grantee handbook and workshop.
Correct. Workshop. It will be on April 24th. And we'll hold it here in this room, starting at about 8:00. I'll send out calendar invitations.
I think we got an email. I questioned that. So anybody that is in the process has to come to that.
Correct. It's just final Thursday of every month.
Is it the same as like the CIB training where if you're going to apply the next round, you have to be there? Or if you're, because with CIB, you don't have to. This is if you're funded, you have to apply.
The CDBG, you have to attend the how to apply workshop. Okay. This is if they've been funded, they have to come to this.
Yeah, and we just review federal requirements and help people get familiar with this is what we'll be asking. This is why we're asking you to do this.
Shane, did you?
What?
Did you say 10?
8, 9. I kind of have to see what the agenda looks like. But.
She means she does not like 8 o'clock.
Yeah. So it'll be 9 or later.
No,
Yeah, we're going to be preparing.
I'm happy with that.
I'll be preparing the outline of the program and setting out a calendar invite based on that.
Shay?
Are we going to have all that additional funding sorted
Yes.
before then so we can notify those applicants? Like
yes.
Time in advance?
I
you mean the night before that you have to get up to Salt Lake by 9 a.m. is not going to be sufficient?
My plan is next.
Was that your question?
You said you have
Greg?
Yep, that's my question.
Any other questions on this? Yeah.
You say you're planning on having the award letter template to open next week?
Somewhere around next week.
Yeah. It is. We're on my plan for Monday.
Yeah.
8 a.m.
You can start planning
Mary, ready for motion? I'll still make that motion. So we have a motion to approve the grantee handbook, and we have the workshop date.
I'll
indicated there. We have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
You'll send out an invite?
Yes.
Okay, and I think the next item is the CDBG implementation review, and I think we've pretty well gone over that. There was
correct.
I appreciate the state staff. I've talked to that a couple of times about some things, one issue that we have, and I suspect others have too, and I appreciate them wanting to take the time to dig into some of this. And again, we all recognize we've got to follow the HUD guidelines, but anything we can do at the state level to streamline the process and make it more inviting to apply, we want to see that. So what you talked about for potentially a...
So we've been working in monthly work groups, work group meetings. We back up on today after this meeting, so if you want to stick around, we'll you have to listen in, but also understand if you don't want to
go with the new way you do
it. But depending on how those conversations go, Jen, myself, staff, suggestions by the federal regulations, we'd like to talk about. Louder. We'd like to talk about it with the board. So we'll be in touch. We will for sure have any suggestions available by September, maybe earlier, but we will be working towards April and to bring it to the state policy board for your consideration.
So does this tie into our next meeting schedule or
no?
That's still open.
Not yet.
So it'll be another meeting maybe before our next meeting.
Possibly. I just want to alert to the possibility. I don't have any plans on that yet.
Okay. So do we have a potential look at when our next meeting will be then? Which right now might be regular meetings, what we're talking about.
Our September-ish.
September. You want to look at your calendar, everybody? Third Thursday today.
Third, fourth, or Thursday. This is
usually what the
third is better.
How does the 18th of September look for everybody?
What's that?
18th of September would be the third Thursday.
Works for me.
Everybody? Those online, does that work for you guys?
I think so. I'm not wanting to lose you as I pull up my calendar.
Mayor Jacobson gave a thumbs up.
And that'll be over by the 2 o'clock meeting already scheduled with the AOG reps?
That works for me at Bragg.
That will be, we'll be discussing that meeting when we have a new federal enforcement person that they had already elections. So,
so it doesn't conflict with that one?
It won't conflict.
That must be when you AOG people have.
Yeah. Every year we, the AOG will prepare an annual action plan that goes in state's annual action plan. It's part of that consolidated plan requirements we have. We just set an annual reminder last year, but
how many federal report persons have we had since then?
That day works for me. Where's the location again?
Hopefully the same location, right?
Yeah.
10 o'clock on September 18th here at 1385 South State.
And I'll be sending a calendar invite once we get done here.
Okay, thank you. Just FYI, it's beautiful in St. George in September.
Oh. You know, the last 2 times I've been to St. George was this week. I was there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. But the last 2 times I've been there, I froze. So I don't know what you guys are doing down there.
Thank you. We're just jealous. We're jealous. We want to be like you.
You do. You need the water.
Yeah. Well, you're always welcome here in the county building. We could accommodate any meeting you wanted to set up to 100 people if you wanted.
What's your thoughts, Gordon?
We'd provide you lunch and everything. And if it's cold, we'll bring you warm socks.
Boy, I mean, like, can't argue with that.
The next night after that is the TuaCon Gala. Maybe I could get you some tickets. So, anyway, just FYI.
That's a maybe.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
Lord, what's your thoughts?
About our families.
Do we want to go to St. George in September for
this? Free lodging.
Yeah.
2 nights.
How does that do cost-wise? Did you don't know how much. It's, I only get paid mileage for this one because I'm close.
It's minimal impact on the budget.
Either
so
way.
Kick it around.
Where are we at, Board? What do you, you want to kick it around and decide? Plan on that date, but it might be. Oh, somebody want to make a motion?
We do have to have a motion.
I'll make a motion for September 18th. Place the sign.
Location to be determined.
Okay, send out a
poll. I'll send out a poll.
So we have a motion to, for the date and the time, the date or location to be determined.
Great.
On that motion?
I'll second.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Makes it pretty inviting. Any other business? Anybody have any other questions or business? Zach, Jennifer?
Thank you for your work.
Yeah.
You need, we always should have stuff to sign. You need.
I don't do that. The reimbursement should come from.
I've got your stuff to sign.
Okay. So we need to get her to do reimbursement signing, whatever you need to do.
Yes.
If not, we would accept the motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Huh?
Wags.
Did they get beat?
No.
When did they play?
Tonight.
Cooper's at 2 o'clock on TNT. Hey, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 No, we don't have the Aggies, too.
Yes, merger.
Cobweb. University. I know it's. University.